Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
You done fell right down that rabbit hole. So
reality is questionable.
Try, but you just can't let it go. These two right here put on a show. It's paranormal overload with Southern hospitality. Haunted murder, mayhem, tip while discussing immortality. Locations with a dark past, history that comes to life. Hillbillies with a knack for everything that goes bump at night. Overthinking if you're by yourself, these two will have you turning on the lights. Mixing in a little comedy to make sure it all fits in just right. Hey.
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. Now here's your hosts, Jerry and Tracy Paul, and their dog Ninja.
And sometimes their cat Freddy, but never the ferrets.
Hey, yeah. This is Tommy Chong. Right now you're listening to the Hillbilly Horror Stories. Ooh, gotta listen to them.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 374 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Tracy.
Tracy, we like to obviously start off thanking all of our military and civil servants all over the world, no matter which country they represent. A big thank you to all you men, women, and service animals for everything you do every day to keep us safe and free.
Yeah, I just feel like we can't say it enough and thank you guys enough for everything that you all do. Continue prayers for the people in Israel. I can't imagine having to, I don't know. I don't even know what to say about that. It's just so heartbreaking. And we just pray for you guys that are over there trying to help. And, you know, thank you guys for keeping us safe so we feel safe every night when we go to bed. You guys are truly angels and we love y'all so much.
Tracy, I don't think it's, it needs to be said, but if you need help because you're handling some stuff mentally that might be just a little more than you think you can handle, please reach out. We would much rather try to talk you through something. And that's when I say we, I mean us, the entire group, everybody involved, your friends, your family. We would much rather help you get through your crisis than you feel like you got to do it on your own and make a very bad decision that unfortunately you won't live to regret.
That's very true, guys. We're always here day or night. You guys can call us. If you need our phone numbers, we'll be happy to give them to you. Please reach out to our group. They are fantastic. We're so proud of this group for all that they do, and it just means the world to us as well. If you feel like you want to call the crisis hotline, it's 988. You can still text us 741-741. Just remember, guys, we love you, and the world is a better place with you in it. So just remember that.
Absolutely. Tracy, this is going to be a super fun episode.
Okay.
First of all, we've got Kelsey Childs on. She's from the Haunted Detective podcast.
Oh,
you
fun.
Guys are going to fall in love with her instantly. She's just got that great personality.
Right.
And actually, Becky Ann Galantine, you guys will probably remember. She's blown up since after she got on our show. It wasn't because of us.
Oh, no. Just because she's wonderful.
Yeah, it's just absolutely wonderful. But she actually referred Kelsey over to us.
Well, good. Thank you so much for that.
Tracy, we haven't done a cryptid episode in a while. So let's do one today. I can honestly say, and I know I say a lot of these are, you know, great episodes, blah, 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 blah. This might be my favorite episode in the 7 years that we've been doing this.
Well, daggone. I can't wait to hear this.
It's at least going to be my favorite in the last several years.
Okay.
I cannot believe I didn't know this story. This is obviously, if you're into cryptids, you may already know this story. I've never heard it, but I thought it was the most fascinating of every cryptid story I've ever heard. Are you ready?
I'm excited.
You're going to need to take a deep breath for this one because this one's an edge of your seat all the way through.
Should I go to the bathroom first?
I don't know why I bought that funnel and hose for, if that's the case.
No, that's true. Case of emergencies, you know.
All right. I can't say for sure if this is a Bigfoot or a Sasquatch story, but I'm pretty sure that it is. Regardless of what it actually is, it's some type of a cryptid involved. And it's just fascinating. So this is a story from the mid-1960s in Copalis Beach, Washington. Copalis Beach is like a few hours from the Seattle area.
Okay.
Did you say okay?
I saw okay.
Oh.
Okie dokie.
This story involves a family that includes the dad, whose name is John, the wife, whose name is Sue, and their two sons, John Jr. and Timothy. John Jr. is 12 years old and Timothy is 4 years old. So John's a foreman at a roofing products mill in Aberdeen, Washington. That's just a few miles away from Copalis Beach. On a Monday morning, sometime in July, John was several hours late for work. This was highly unusual. In fact, he was usually early getting the saws and the trucks ready for the day. When John showed up, he was visibly shaken. And when his supervisor asked him what was wrong, he said, you know what, is there any way we can go to your office and speak so I can have a more private area to talk to you? He didn't want others to hear anything that had went on, and you're going to find out why. So they went to this private location. They sat down. John said, something destroyed our house this weekend. His supervisor thought that he said someone broke into the house, and he asked John if it was someone he knew. John said, no, you don't understand. This wasn't a person. This was, I don't really know what it was, but it completely trashed our house. The family is going to stay with my brother and Elma for a while. So John's supervisor asked him to explain exactly what happened, and John went on to tell all of the incredible details. He said when he had gotten home from work Friday evening, his youngest son, Tim, the four-year-old, told him that he saw, and I quote, a cowman walking at the edge of the field that afternoon. He assumed that the child meant a cowboy because some of their neighbors wore cowboy hats when they were out in the field.
Oh, okay.
So when he asked the boy if they were wearing cowboy hats, Tim said, no, Daddy, he was a cowman, furry, and he stinks like the cows. Well, John asked Sue if she knew what he was talking about. And she said that Tim had been playing on the porch that afternoon. He came running in and said that there was a cowman stuck on the fence. He was very excited, so she went out to see what this was, you know, all about. Mm-hmm. What's he talking about? She said that she opened the door and was immediately hit by a horrible smell, like wet dogs and garbage. Tim was pointing across the field to opposite where their house was and said, oh, he got loose. She looked over where he was pointing and she could see the top strand of the barbed wire bouncing up and down.
Mm-hmm.
Almost
like
this,
he just had gotten
yeah,
up
like
there.
Somebody just maybe just took their hand down and let it go. And
right.
She didn't see any type of animal, though, so she just kind of dismissed it. In fact, the only thing out of the ordinary was the smell. She did tell Tim to play inside for the rest of the day because she felt a little uneasy and a little bit scared because she just didn't know what he could have possibly seen. The older boy, John, he was at a friend's house, and he walked home just a short while after Tim saw this quote-unquote cowman. John told his mother that somebody followed him home. They were walking in the woods just off to the right side of the road. He never actually saw them because they never left the woods. But it had to be a really big man because he could hear large sticks cracking and the footsteps were very heavy. Once he got to the driveway to the house, the footsteps stopped.
That's a pretty good indication he was being followed, for sure.
He was pretty shaken up by the event. He wanted his father to go to the woods and check it out for him. And that's exactly what would happen. Later that evening, John strapped on his .357 and he took his older son out to the field. They first checked out where Tim said he saw the cowman stuck on the fence. And they walked down the fence line, but everything looked to be okay. They did find something rather unusual, though. There was a large clump of long, reddish-brown hair tangled in the top strand of the barbed wire. John tried to pull it off, but it was, like, really tangled up. He pulled out his knife and just cut it off. It was over a foot long, real coarse, and stringy like the horse mane or a horse tail.
Mm-hmm.
There appeared to be a lot of flesh matted to the clump.
Oh, that had to hurt.
The top wire was also pulled loose from one of the posts. Whatever was hung up on the fence had to be very big. So they climbed through the fence and they walked towards the woods. He couldn't find any type of hoof prints or any other tracks along the way. The edge of the woods began about 10 feet from the fence. They entered on a small game trail that was usually frequented by deer. It was around 8 p.m. and it was starting to get dark. They walked for a bit and they started to smell that rotten garbage slash wet dog odor that his wife had spoken about. John started to have the feeling that they were being watched. The hair stood up on the back of his neck. He told John Jr. that they should just head back while they still had some daylight left, and they began walking back out of the woods. They could hear heavy footsteps off to their left. They would stop, and the footsteps would stop. They got to about the clearing when John whispered to his son to run like hell to the house on the count of three.
Oh my gosh, that's terrifying.
So he whispered, 1, 2, 3, and he gave his son a push in the back to get him going. But John spun around and headed in the opposite direction toward the footsteps with his gun drawn. There's a lot of dense underbrush, so he had a hard time making headway. As he got close, he could hear it moving away from him, deeper and deeper into the woods. John assumed that it was a vagrant camping out in the woods and possibly scouting out houses to rob at night. And John was a pretty good-sized man himself, and he had a gun, so he really wasn't worried about confronting a vagrant in the woods. Eventually, he heard the movement stop. As he looked into the woods, he thought he saw movement by a large tree. He aimed his gun, and then he gave the command, whoever was back there, to come out nice and slow, or he would shoot. That's when he got a glimpse of the creature.
Oh my gosh. What did he look like?
He looked like a huge bear.
Oh.
He could only see bits and pieces through the thick vegetation. He was moving quietly on four legs. It was about 15 feet away from him at this point. Like I said, he thought it was a bear. But suddenly he saw a huge hairy arm with human-like hands reach out of the brush and grab a small alder tree. The tree was about 4 inches in diameter. It grabbed it about 5 feet up on the tree. It then pulled itself upright by holding the tree. It then stood on two legs. It turned its upper body and stared straight at John. It was enormous and definitely not a bear. It had to be over 7 foot tall and at least half that across the chest. It was too dark to make out any facial features, but its eyes seemed to glow a deep red. He could see teeth because it appeared to be curling its lips back.
It was Elvis.
It lunged forward, breaking the tree that it had been holding on to. It then disappeared into the deep brush. He said it sounded like a bulldozer going through there with no engine sounds as it made its way through the woods.
Oh, so it didn't lunge toward him?
No. It dawned on John, though, that it was heading towards the house the way that his son had went.
Hope he got back there in time.
John ran to the trail, hoping to be able to cut it off before reaching the clearing. He could hear the creature thrashing through the woods as he was running. He got to the clearing and he searched frantically for his son. He spotted John Jr. just inside the fence, waiting for his dad. John screamed at him to run to the house. At this time, the creature emerged from the woods about 50 feet from his left. It crossed the 10-foot clearing and stepped over the fence in two strides and was running through the field towards his son in a matter of seconds. John screamed for his son to run faster, and he aimed his gun at the creature. He didn't want to shoot because he was afraid that he would hit his son or the house.
Mm-hmm.
So he just basically chased both of them. He could see it angling towards his son, who had no clue that it was even coming. He was focused on getting to the house. But John knew that there was no way that the boy was going to make it before this thing cut him off. In desperation, he pointed the gun to the ground at his side, and he fired, hoping to scare it. It didn't work. In fact, the creature just kind of veered even more sharply towards his son and put on a burst of speed. He heard John Jr. scream as the two collided. The creature dipped his shoulder, and in a second, John Jr. was airborne. He flew about 10 feet and then hit the ground rolling.
Ooh.
The creature never paused. It continued to run away at an amazing breakneck speed towards the woods.
So he just flipped the kid and then took off back to the woods.
Yep. John turned and he squared off and shot his 5 remaining rounds at the beast. He doesn't think that he hit it with any of the bullets because he said it never even slowed down. So he just assumes he missed him completely. Mm-hmm. John Jr., on the other hand, was shaken up, but he was physically fine. He asked his father if it was a bear, because like I said, you know, he had no idea he was even being chased.
Right. Well, that's probably a good thing he did not know that.
He just knew something big and black ran over top of him. They both end up running into the house. They locked the door behind them. They were out of breath and white as ghosts. His wife was in a panic because she had heard the gunshots. He filled her in when he actually could catch his breath and started to call the sheriff, but then he stopped in the middle of dialing the number to think exactly what he would have told the sheriff.
Mm-hmm, because he would have thought he was crazy.
Right. So he hung up the phone, realizing what an idiot he would have looked like to say that the boogeyman had just chased him out of the woods. He told his wife that it was a large animal. He had no idea how to tell her that the 4-year-old was right and the cowman was real. It was more frightening than anything he said he could ever have imagined. He told her to keep the door locked and stay away from the windows. A little later that evening, around 10 p.m., the two boys were in bed. John and his wife were watching the news. They heard a loud moaning cry, kind of like a siren from a fire truck. He said at the end of it, there was a whoop whoop sound.
A whoop whoop?
Yep. Which you hear a lot with Bigfoot.
Oh.
It's like the whoop whoop is the sound that they supposedly make.
Oh.
It was coming from the woods across from the house. Sue asked, "What the hell was that?" And John said, "That's Tim's cowman."
Oh my gosh. How scary.
She wanted to call the sheriff, but John said that he would handle it himself. Sue said, "Fine," but she didn't want the kids to go outside until this thing was gone. This howling that they were hearing went on till around midnight, so a couple of hours, then it finally stopped. John wanted to stay up and keep an eye on the house, but let's be honest, he was worn out from a long day work and then chasing this thing through the woods and all this. He was beat. He went to bed around 1 a.m., and no more issues actually happened that night. The following morning, though, they slept in. The boys got up early, and they were watching some cartoons. The first thing John Jr. told his parents is that he heard the bear rubbing against the house last night.
Ugh.
He said he was too scared to actually get up and go tell them. He ended up falling back to sleep just a short time later. But that was nothing compared to what the 4-year-old told him. He said, "The cowman talks funny." John asked him, "When did you talk to the cowman?" And Tim told him, "Oh, I spoke to him last night." And John said, "Was he in your room?" And Tim said, oh, no, he's way too big for that. I talked to him through the window. When he asked what the cowman said, Tim just said, he talks funny. I don't really know what he said. He talks like this. And Tim started making monkey-like noises, like, ooh, ah, ah, ah. That's a bad monkey, I know. I should spank it. John asked if the cowman actually tried to get in the window, and Tim said that he was too big for that, too. Tim said, he just made funny faces, and he has Lincoln log teeth.
What a description.
So John later learned that what he meant was the creature had square teeth that looked like the same size as the blocks in a set of Lincoln logs.
Mm-hmm.
I used to play with Lincoln logs all the time when I was a kid. Loved them.
Mm-hmm.
Tim said that it's been a long time talking and making faces before it finally laid down under his window and went to sleep. He said, I could even hear it snoring.
I'll be dang.
Apparently he has sleep apnea as well.
Definitely. Well, I'm sure he was exhausted too from all that running.
He then told the boys to get dressed that they were going to visit their uncle in Elma for the day. After the family left, John, who stayed behind, called a co-worker by the name of Patrick to come over. Now, Patrick was an ex-state trooper. He had unfortunately lost his job because he had a drinking problem. But he was a really good worker down at the mill, and he never got drunk before dark, so Patrick said, hey, you know, or John said he knew he could get Patrick over, he could at least try to help hunt this thing through most of the day, because he didn't have to worry about Patrick drinking.
Okay.
When Patrick got there, John asked him if he was up for some hunting. Figuring they would, you know, have most of the day, like I said, to hunt for this thing, Patrick said, though, that he wasn't a poacher, and he didn't want to know about it if John was. But John informed him that they were not going to be hunting for deer. And then he explained the situation. Patrick obviously didn't believe him, but he could see that John was really shook up. So he said, what the heck, let's do it. John had a pistol and a .30-06 rifle. Patrick had a .38 in the car, and then John loaned him a 12-gauge shotgun. So they had enough ammo to go out after this thing. The first, they circled the house to take a look for any signs of this beast. In the back of the house, under the garden hose, where it was muddy, they found a print that looked like a bare human foot, except it was at least 18 inches long and very wide.
That's a big-ass foot.
It sure is. It was so clear, the print was, that it was almost as if it was left purposely. There were no prints anywhere else, even in the places where there could have been. Almost as if it had avoided them places.
So there was just one footprint?
One footprint. There was also four lines beside the footprint, as if someone had raked their fingers through the mud.
What's going on here?
When they got to the over to Tim's window, they saw what it was for. Above the window, a good 7 feet, were muddy streaks. On the window itself, there were several muddy fingerprints. Patrick was now starting to become a believer in what Tim had told him.
Mm-hmm.
So before going to the woods, John needed to feed the family pigs. There were two of them. They were both younger pigs, about 40 pounds each. John noticed, though, as he got closer to the area where the pigs were kept, that he couldn't hear the pigs making any noise. Usually, they would squeal like crazy when they knew food was getting pretty close to them. They rounded the corner, and the pen was completely empty. No sign of any struggle. They were just gone. Both pigs. So now they hit the woods to try to find this thing. They started on the exact same trail that John and John Jr. went on the day before. He showed Patrick the barbed wire and told him about the hair that he'd found. It was a beautiful morning, and John was amazed at how different that it actually was from the night before. See, the night before, the woods were still and very silent. Now, though, the wood was alive with birds and small animals. They followed the trail of broken trees and branches, and they even could find a few faint footsteps where the ground was soft. By noon, they were both getting kind of hungry, and they went back to the house for lunch. They spent the rest of the day searching, but didn't find anything unusual. Just before dark, Sue and the kids come home. John and Patrick were sitting on the porch with their guns watching the woods. John told Sue about the footprints and the mud on the window, But Patrick was starting to drink. So John sent him home. He figured drunks and guns don't mix. He didn't need a drunk sitting there.
That's very true.
With a gun in his family and just taking a chance of something crazy happening. So John stayed on the porch watching the woods. His wife brought him a plate of food and a flashlight and a lantern. John decided to stay out there and watch the house throughout the night. Before bedtime, though, he moved their king-size bed away from the window, and he decided that Sue and both kids would actually sleep in that bed in their bedroom that night. He was going to stay outside on the porch, and Sue knew how to handle a gun, so she kept the shotgun by her bedside. Mm-hmm. He did make her promise, though, to ask a name before shooting anything, and if it replied that it was John, please don't shoot it. There was a full moon this night. John could see across the field into mm-hmm. the woods with no problem whatsoever. There were plenty of sounds of crickets and frogs also going on. They had a little pond behind their house. We could hear the frogs behind him and the crickets in front of him. John wandered to the end of the porch, and he looked at the barn. Something was different, but he couldn't quite put his finger on it. Now, the front of the barn was facing the house. The door was open on it. Moonlight was hitting it from the side. It was casting these deep shadows onto the inside, so it was making it kind of hard to see stuff, but at the same time, he could see that there was definitely some shadows. He just kept staring at it, thinking about the missing pigs, and soon he realized what was different. All the crickets and the frogs had gone silent.
Whoa. Well, maybe they were tired and went to sleep.
As he walked back to his chair, he thought he saw some movement in the barn. So he focused on the barn. He turned his head a little bit to the side, and he saw what looked like two red eyes. These two red eyes were hovering about 8 feet from the ground. He couldn't see them if he looked straight at it, but when he kind of squinted a little bit, they became clearer. As his heart was pounding in his chest, he waited for the creature to leave the barn and approach the house. He slowly backed up and picked up his rifle. He walked back to the end of the porch and he waited. He stared for what seemed like hours, but it never came out. He couldn't see any movement any longer. He then grabbed his flashlight and he shined it into the barn, but his flashlight was too small and it wouldn't reach the barn. He was going to have to get closer. He wasn't thrilled about leaving the safety of this house, but he also wasn't going to live in fear in his own house. He left the porch and he began slowly making his way towards the barn, taking his time and building up his courage. He could still see no movement. When he got to within 20 feet of the opening, his flashlight would now be adequate to shine some light into the barn. There were too many places in there for something even as big as this animal to hide. There was an old pickup truck in there, a tractor, several boxes. So he walked around, shining the flashlight down the barrel of his rifle. He wandered all around the barn. He made his way to the back and slowly turned around to leave. He was relieved, at the same time kind of concerned, that he didn't find anything. Where could it have gone? Mm-hmm. He knows it was in there. As he was walking out, he glanced at the wide stairs that led to the hayloft and he froze. What if it was up there, waiting for him to walk right underneath the hayloft so it could pounce on him? John was frozen in fear. Suddenly, there was a booming sound of a shotgun from the house, followed by Sue screaming. John forgot about what he was thinking about and bolted to the house. As he was running, he hears an inhuman roar coming from the woods right behind the house. It sounded pissed off and in pain. He heard another scream, and then the sound of branches breaking, then being plowed through the forest away from the house. As he rushed through the front door and down the hallway into the bedroom, his family was huddled together on the bed crying. Sue was still pointing the shotgun towards the blown-out window. She swung the gun towards John and screamed as John hit the floor. Luckily, she didn't shoot. He asked what had happened, but she was too shook up to answer at the moment. So Tim had no issues talking, though. He was crying and he was asking, "Why did you shoot the cowman, Mommy? Why?" John Jr. had his face buried in his mom's shoulder crying. After everything had calmed down, John had them follow him to the living room. He looked around and locked the door, and then he told them to go get in the car. He then drove them to his brother's house in Elma. Everyone was still in their pajamas and just, you know, middle of the night, not planning on going anywhere, but they didn't even take time to change clothes or anything.
Yeah.
On the way, Sue explained what happened. A few hours after they went to bed, she had finally dozed off. She was awoken by Tim talking to someone and the sound of these bizarre clicking and chirping noises. Tim wasn't in bed. He was standing in front of one of the windows. The moonlight was shining through both windows in the room, so the room was lit up pretty good. But there was a large shadow obscuring the window in front of Tim. She told him to get away from the window. Tim said, "Mommy, listen, the cowman can sound like a bird," and he pointed at the dark figure in the window. Sue demanded that Tim get away from the window while she tried to keep her voice quiet. Right after she spoke, the sound outside changed. It went from soft chirping to a strange gibbering, is what they listed it as. Almost like human speech, with an occasional pig-like snort thrown in. Now, at this time, John Jr. woke up, and he loudly said, "What's that?" Well, this seemed to agitate the creature.
Well, he's trying to have a conversation with Tim.
Who then slammed both fists into the side of the house, hard enough to make the entire room and windows shake.
Wow.
John Jr. screamed and Tim yelled, "Quiet, you're going to scare him away." Now Sue yelled at Tim to get away from the damn window. She grabbed a shotgun. She got out of bed and approached the window. The creature leaned down and stared straight into the window at her. She screamed and raised the gun, but she was afraid to shoot because her son was so close to the window.
Right.
As she reached for Tim, a hairy arm busted through the window in an attempt to grab her son. She screamed again and fired over Tim's head, blowing out the rest of the window and hitting the creature with buckshot. It jerked backwards and ran off into the dark. A few seconds later, she heard it screaming in the woods. She started crying, saying, "It was trying to take my Tim. It was trying to grab my baby." So they stayed the rest of the night and the following night with John's brother. He told his brother about the events that had happened, but could tell that his brother didn't believe him.
Mm-hmm.
His brother did agree, though, to drive the following morning before work to John's house with him and take a look at the situation. So they get to the house. They had left the front door open. They were in such a haste to leave. When they went into the house, it looked like a tornado had gone through it. The couch was upside down. A large, heavy console TV had been thrown across the room. The kitchen was completely trashed. The refrigerator was knocked over. Food was everywhere. Now, the boys' room, both of the boys' rooms, because they both had their own rooms, had the doors closed, so there was no damage done.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing for the bathroom. The bathroom door was closed. So there was no damage done to that. They make their way down the hallway where the master bedroom was. It was torn completely apart. Pillows were ripped open, feathers were everywhere, the chest of drawers was knocked over, and the large mirror was smashed.
Was there any kind of blood anywhere from where she shot him?
They didn't mention anything about that. John's brother looked around and said, "You better call the police." And John replied, "And tell them what? A Bigfoot destroyed my house?" So they left and locked up the house this time because, you know,
Well, who cares now?
Yeah. They drove to John's workplace, to the mill in Aberdeen. And that's when John, that takes us back to the beginning of the story, where John had showed up late and he told his boss about it. Well, his boss said, well, let's go take a look at it. They drove to the house again. This time, John showed his boss the damage, as well as the clump of hair that he had gotten off of the fence. As they're walking through the house, his boss pointed out some cracks in the ceiling. This was apparently where the creature had stood up and hit his head.
Oh, God bless.
John told his boss that he couldn't live there anymore. Even if this creature was gone, they would be too afraid to live there with everything that had happened. So their homeowner's insurance wouldn't cover any of the damages. The adjuster claimed that he thought that John must have did all of this in a drunken fit of rage.
Come on now.
I mean, you could, there wasn't really nothing to prove it was anything other than somebody vandalizing
the house. Well, then how did the cracks get in the ceiling?
Well, they could have done that. You could have thrown something up there and done that.
Oh. Well, that sucks.
Well, John's boss helped him find a place in Aberdeen, which was where the mill was, and then he gave him a loan so they could get furniture and other needs. The house was eventually fixed up and sold, and apparently no stories of the creature was ever heard from anybody else that lived there from that time. So the question is, Tracy, was this a made-up story to gain some type of attention? If so, what would he have to gain? It wasn't for financial reasons. He was trying to, he didn't want to tell nobody about it.
No, that's very true.
He didn't call the police. His boss said that he was genuinely terrified and he didn't want to go back to that house, not even to get their clothes.
So, no, I can't believe that's made up, especially with that little kid.
Yeah, kids don't lie like that. 4-year-old, they're going to tell you everything and anything.
That's so bizarre. And that, especially, I mean, I guess you could see how one would think that since nobody heard anything after the fact that anything else happened, it would be kind of bizarre.
Or maybe it went somewhere and died.
It could have. Yes, she did shoot him.
She did. So, I don't know. How about that for a crazy story?
Yeah, that's pretty bizarre for sure. So,
all right, we're going to take a quick sponsor break and we'll be right back.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, Tracy, so we don't have a ton to promote as far as housekeeping. Obviously, the biggest news is we just found out last week and announced that we're going to be at CryptidCon performing. Now, we knew we were going to be at CryptidCon because we're there every year.
Mm-hmm.
But we're actually going to be performing a live show for the first time. That will be Saturday, the 18th of November. That's the weekend before Thanksgiving. It's a Saturday night, right after all the festivities are done and they close up. Our show takes place right after, so everybody can just stay and view that.
Okay.
So you can get tickets at CryptidCon.com. You don't need anything special. If you've got your CryptidCon admission ticket, that gets you admission into the show for free. No additional cost.
Good.
So we're excited to finally actually be able to perform out there. It's a great crowd.
Well, I hope a lot of people stay and listen.
The only other thing we've got is the cruise. We're working on, and I'm working on shows already for next year, so they'll all be a little bit closer for the most part, but we are going to have a handful of shows.
Sounds good.
All right, with that being said, what do we got going on over with Patreon and reviews?
We have Fiddler4, SK Morris 007, and Mojo Lobster. Thank you guys for your reviews. Those really help us a lot. And we appreciate y'all taking the time out to do that and kind of boost our show up a little bit so people can see us quicker, I guess. I don't know. Is that the way it is?
Let me explain why so many podcasts ask for the reviews. Now, for us, the more listens that we have, it gives us the opportunity to make more money because more people hear commercials, blah, 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 blah. So just like on YouTube, the more views you get, the more a person can actually make. And that's the same way with us. Especially this time of year, people are looking for spooky stuff. But if they go put paranormal on a search engine, they're going to have a bunch of shows listed so they could pick any of them.
Mm-hmm.
The shows who have the most reviews, they move up that list. So when you pull up, like right now, if you pull up paranormal, we're probably going to be like 39th down the list. So most people aren't going to make it that far. But if we get a bunch of reviews, we move up to the top 5, top 6, top 7, where people more see it. That helps us get more subscribers. Not just us, that's every podcast. But that's why everybody has reviews, because when somebody does a search, you turn up higher in the search if you've got a bunch more reviews that week.
Very true.
Or that day.
Yeah. And we definitely appreciate that you guys do that for us. It means the world. So, and then our Patreon this week is Issa Hyde. Honey, I hope I said your name right. Thank you guys. Thank you so much for your
patronage.
Oh my God. Yes. Sorry. My mind just like totally went blank. Oh, good Lord. But yeah, thank you guys. We really appreciate it. And, you know, thank you guys for hanging in there with us as much as you all do.
Yep. Absolutely. We appreciate it. All right. Now let's listen to Kelsey Childs from The Haunted Detective. Hey guys, you know, we are always excited to bring you the best new podcasts out there. And I think we've got one for you. I have fallen in love with this podcast. It's fairly new, and you know, I don't bring people on unless I believe in them. We've got Kelsey Childs, and she gets together with one of her friends, Griff Milton, and they go on to explore paranormal mysteries nestled with the strangest true crime cases that you will ever hear about. Kelsey, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to talk about this.
I am excited to hear a little bit of the behind the scenes stuff. So this is what I like to do with new podcasters. I'm going to assume that most of our listeners haven't had a chance to listen yet. You tell me what they're in for when they listen. Describe the podcast to me in your own words.
Oh man. Well, it's basically, I like to call it a journey of discovery. Because I want to approach true crime and paranormal stories from a different and new perspective. People hear these same stories over and over and over again. And for me, I'm like, what if we actually solved something, or we actually went on a journey together, host, co-host, and listener? So I was thinking about it, and I'm in love with the series BuzzFeed Unsolved. And I had recently started listening to the podcast Serial. So I was like, what if we take a bunch of these podcasts that go through this explorative process and we match them together and focus on all these pillars like paranormal, true crime, unsolved mysteries. We take 7 episodes in a season and we focus around one main subject. So for season 1, which you'll be tuning into that, and probably the beginning of season 2, we focus on Anatoly Moskvin. This is a very disturbed man who dug children up from their graves and turned them into porcelain dolls. So the thing that fascinates me about Anatoly is not the crime he committed. That's said and done. He claims that he was forced to posthumously marry a little girl after she died, and her ghost haunted him and wanted to teach him black magic. Now, he dug these kids up from their graves and turned them into porcelain dolls because he thought he was helping them and like relieving them of some sort of eternal darkness of the afterlife and giving them a new home. He didn't, you know, participate in any sort of sexual activity with these little corpses. He treated them like his children. And he has a lot of study points on Celtic folklore, necromancy, and that sort of thing. So for the podcast, we dive into his story using comparative evidence, historical context, and a lot of really cool concrete stories of ghosts haunting people and attaching to people like Natasha did to him.
Here's what I like about your podcast. We actually cover Anatoly on my other podcast in a future episode, but it's like a 30-minute oversight of everything that happened. But even in the research, I knew I wouldn't do a complete deep dive. In the research that I did, you know, there was some mention, obviously, of all this started with the little girl that obviously was dead, and he was kind of forced to kiss her and all that. But that's kind of where it stopped at for me. I didn't see the information that you've been able to dig up, pardon the pun, on him being haunted by this the whole rest of his adult life, basically, and the black magic part, her wanting to teach him. That's all stuff that I learned from your podcast, which, you know, I think it's absolutely amazing how deep you've went to uncover stuff on this case.
I think it's really interesting to take these mysteries and just like uncover more and more and more. And I spent, I would say, like 8 hours a day, 40 hours a week in front of my computer looking stuff up. I'm definitely on some sort of watch list on the government because of how much stuff I Googled out of Russia.
Without a doubt. But that's what it takes to get that. I mean, I know when we first started Hillbilly Horror Stories, you know, it was so much effort. And you, obviously, 7 years later, we've been able to streamline some of that and make it a little bit easier. But in the beginning, it's just like, you know, where do I search? Where do I find this information at? So like in this particular case, other than just your general searches, what kind of sites have you went to try to dig up information?
There have been a lot of them. Some of them I've actually gone onto Russian websites and then translated them into English. Google has a great database that it's transferred through from Google Translate to websites. But I mean, I love websites like All That's Interesting, Medium. I would say that the most reliable sources that I've been to are, you know, news articles reporting on current events or All That's Interesting. I think that they are very grounded and realistic in the way that they portray information.
What made you out of every story you could have chose to start off your podcast with? What made you choose Anatoly Moskvin for your very first series?
He's so messed up. I think that there's so much that you can learn from paranormal and true crime mysteries. And Anatoly kind of covers all of those bases. It's sort of like the epitome of starting with a bang. You know, he has that psychology aspect. He has the paranormal aspect. He has the true crime aspect. And a while ago, I would say about 2 years ago, I covered him on TikTok and brought forth all of this extra information I was able to find. And it just absolutely blew up and people just wanted to know more and they wanted more answers. And I was like, well, now I have a platform that I can bring them these answers.
What do you think about the comparisons between he and Carl Tanzler from Key West? Because obviously Carl did what he did in the 40s. So this was, you know, some years later when he did this. And there are some similarities in some of the stuff that he did with stuffing the bodies, the body cavities with rags and stuff like that, and making them into dolls, which is, you know, now Tanzler only did it to the one young lady, but, you know, he held onto that body for like 7 years, I think, before he got caught, before the young lady's sister actually found out what was going on. But do you see some similarities? Do you think that Anatoly may have done some research on Carl Tanzler and maybe use that as some inspiration?
I wouldn't say that he did. Tanzler feels more like mad scientist making Frankenstein sort of vibes without the intention of bringing a monster back to life. His victim was not a monster. She was a victim. And Tanzler did engage in sexual activities with
That's true.
Her corpse. Although I will say that he put a paper tube down there, so I'm not really sure how that went. He did it all out of an abandoned airplane that he just happened to find. I guess they were sitting all over Florida at the time. But, you know, from stealing X-ray equipment to, you know, the Count Carl von Kossel name, which is very indicative of fascism from where he came from, which is actually something my co-host taught me. I'm supposed to be there teaching her stuff, and she taught me that the Count Von name, when someone moved from where he moved to America, was used to like, hey, I'm a fascist, but here's a little, you're going to see me as superior, right? Usually men, women that are not as wealthy in these other countries. I think that Carl didn't have good intentions. I think that, not to say that Anatoly did, but I think his intentions were a lot more nefarious. And he, you know, left behind his children and his wife and basically lived with this woman. And she had rejected all of his advances in real life. And after she died, he did not respect that. What Anatoly did was completely and utterly wrong, along with Carl Tanzler, but I think they're two different ends of the same spectrum. I think that Anatoly gained a lot of inspiration from his study of Celtic folklore, of other cultures keeping corpses around, and I think it was just his own fanatical mind. Tanzler, I think, was just on a whole nother level of sociopathic crazy.
No, I agree with you 100%. I think my question was more in the preparation of the bodies after they were dug up, I guess was more the inspiration I was talking about, not so much for the reasons for what they did. It just seemed like a lot of stuff he did with this body was the same type of stuff that Tanzler did. So it seems like he might've been aware of how to do this on that aspect, but either way, it's just creepy. You know, the man had 25 or 27, you know, bodies in this little apartment.
Yeah, he, you have to think, I mean, this all happened. He was arrested in 2011 and he must have been on some like crazy forums, right? Looking up how to preserve these bodies and turn them into dolls. Like he's probably on some, you know, backdoor websites talking to some really scary people, some people that might know about Tanzler. So it's possible that like their stories crossed in a lot of ways. But Anatoly had 29 of these girls in his apartment that he lived in with his parents, which is just bizarre to me that his parents had no idea. But he would actually take these dolls, these children, and when he was done with them, he would put them in the garage and say, "I'm done with you. You're staying in here now."
Well, you know, it's like, you know, time out.
I guess you're going to the garage.
So obviously you like the macabre, you like the, I would say the twists and turns in some stories, obviously. Do you have an idea what your next topic's going to be yet? Or is that a surprise?
I do. I've teased it a bit on TikTok live. Stephen Kubacki, he disappeared out of the Michigan Triangle and reappeared 15 months later in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, with no recollection of the past months he was gone.
Yeah, that's a crazy story. Because I think if I remember correctly, I think he ended up at like a relative's house or within a relative's house. And he had clothes on that he didn't recognize. And he had like a backpack with a bunch of stuff, like a map or stuff in there. And he didn't know what any of that stuff was. But, you know, he's just right there on the Lake Michigan, up in the Michigan Triangle, and disappears. And then poof, that's a very strange case. That'll be a fun one to listen to.
Yeah. I think the most disturbing part, minus the odd disappearance and reappearance, was the way that investigators handled his disappearance. Is he had footprints that led 100 feet to the edge of the lake where the ice started and then just vanished. And the investigators were like, you know, he fell through the ice. And when I was doing my research, I'm like, but the water doesn't freeze back over. It was like untouched. The ice covering the lake was smooth. There's no way that he possibly fell through and drowned. But here they are being so insistent on a mundane explanation, because it, at the end of the day, a lot of people just feel better sticking with the mundane and sticking with the human side of things. They couldn't admit like, wow, this is weird. He just disappeared. Just poof.
Yeah. There's a lot of cases that just doesn't make sense. And I don't remember the exact, all the details of the case, but you'll probably be aware of the situation. But there's one where this guy ends up, I think he ends up like across country. He was in a truck or something, a semi truck. And he's got like a cell phone that he doesn't know where he got. It's not his phone. And I mean, this was like in the last 15, 20 years, but it's another one of those cases where somebody just, if I remember correctly, the friends were on a ski trip and he went out on the slopes on his own. And when he didn't show up, they were the friends. They get everybody involved in the search, and he ends up across country in a semi, like at a truck stop. And they're like, what, how the hell did this happen? How do you end up on a ski trip and then you end up cross country in like California with a trucker and you don't know how you got there? You know, it just made no sense whatsoever. And there's got to be some kind of explanation for these things. But if the people involved can't give you the explanation, who can?
Exactly. Actually, I have not heard of that one. So I'm definitely going to ask you more information when I keep writing season two.
Yeah, that's a really cool one, but it goes right in with the one you were talking about as far as similar situations. So they're out there. And you got people in these missing 411 cases that everything kind of gets lumped into that, but they're not all the same exact description when you look at them. But, you know, there's people that, hey, they just end up missing and they tell you they were in a cave and, you know, they woke up and there was all this weird stuff around them. Next thing you know, they've lost 2 or 3 days. They don't know what happened, but they remember being in a cave. And it's almost like, you know, I don't know if you believe in time warps or parallel universes or stuff like that, but it's almost like there has to be something like that out there to explain some of this.
Oh, I agree 100%. There's one that I'm going to be covering in season two, which is my absolute just favorite location to talk about. I want to go visit one day, the Hoiabatu Forest in Romania, which is named after a shepherd who disappeared with his flock of 200 sheep. I mean, the forest isn't big enough. If you go missing with like 20 sheep, maybe 5 sheep, I don't know, then it's like, okay, that's possible. But 200, that is just bizarre. But there are so many missing persons cases in that forest. And one of them speaks to a little girl who disappeared into the forest and reappeared a significant amount of time later. And she was dressed the same and it looked like no time had passed.
Yep, exactly. I got some friends that's been to the Hoiabatu twice. So
what was it like?
Oh, they said it was amazing. They got actually told some stories about it at one point in time. They were, you know, because you know they have the clearing there that were they went upon the clearing and they said there was a couple of guys that were in robes and stuff that were doing some kind of ceremony. So it kind of freaked them out a little bit, but apparently that's something that's pretty common over there, but they loved it enough that they went back a second time.
Yeah. I've got to say, if that were me and it were a horror movie, I'd be the first to die. I'd be like, wow, what are these people doing? I'm going to go ask them questions and take pictures with them.
Let me run up on them and get some selfies. So what's your thoughts on the Japanese suicide force?
That one's interesting. See, there's one thing I don't believe in, and that's coincidences. There's either a inhuman, paranatural, whatever you want to call it, explanation for something, or a scientific explanation. And there are some theories about the suicide forest that there's this high-pitched whistling sound, which is their same theory for, I think, the Dietoff Pass situation, where it's this high-pitched noise that just makes people go like crazy. I don't know if I really subscribe to that because there's no way to prove or disprove it. You can't just say, hey, invisible noise makes people go cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. That's not science. That's not how that works. But I don't know. I think that there's something weird going on there. I think that whenever it started, however it started, it attracted an energy. And the thing with hauntings, and I'm not here to say like the suicide forest is haunted, although it probably is. I don't know that for a fact, but it's weird. It's a weird place. Is that like hauntings aren't always spirits or ghosts, in my opinion. Sometimes it's just residual energy and like these retained emotions and trauma and whatever. And when a place has like enough of that, it's kind of like The Grudge, that Japanese horror movie. When an area or location has enough of that energy, it attracts more of it. And I think it's a fascinating concept of like the human attraction to good or bad energy.
Now, I will agree to disagree on a couple of points.
Okay.
So I definitely think the suicide force, what is it? Ioka Kahara. I can't remember. I'm sure I'm butchering the Japanese language, but there were, it's a fact there that they used to, the Japanese used to take their elders there when they felt like they were of no use and just leave them in the forest to die. So if that was something that was common in a place that with a population of Japan, you could imagine that probably does create some type of a haunting out there. Now, whether that's got to do with the people committing suicide or not, no clue. But what you did say was about the high pitch, about there really isn't any scientific evidence. I would point to tinnitus, which is, you know, I've got tinnitus and it doesn't affect me like that, but there are people who committed suicide because it just irritates them to the point where that was when I was first diagnosed with tinnitus. That was one of the things they warned me about, was how many people commit suicide because of tinnitus, which is basically a high pitched sound. And then also, if you remember back in the, or maybe you don't even know this, but back in the 50s and the 60s, they started putting these ultrasonic waves into horror movies to make the movie more intense that people couldn't even pick up on. So a lot of horror movies actually do have this type of sound wave or something that you wouldn't know is there to bring out a certain fear factor in you. So they do kind of experiment with that with movies. So it wouldn't surprise me if they know scientifically that they can make a horror movie more intense by adding this, that a sound like that out there could have an effect like it would a dog whistle on a dog.
Don't get me wrong. I believe that it's very much a real thing. I have something called misophonia, which like certain sounds bother me to the point that it physically hurts. And I've been at points where it's gotten so bad where I'm like, I'd rather rip my eardrums out than hear this sound right now. Like a very normal sound, like white noise, a car speaker, whatever it is.
Taylor but then Swift there's album. Also that
Taylor Swift, all the Taylor Swift TikToks with Travis Kelce, too much. There's that place, New Mexico. I think it's Taos, New Mexico, where the mysterious humming noise was. Yeah. But I think more so my point with like the Diatlov Pass and Suicide Forest is just throwing that assumption onto a place like that without actually going there and trying to figure it out is another example of people saying, okay, let's stick with the most mundane explanation to avoid this whole other side of the world that we don't want to look at as scientists.
No, I completely agree with you. You can't just make the assumption. You have to do the research to find out what's true and what's not.
Well, it's the same thing with Diatlov, is they tried throwing all of those like scientific explanations onto it, like slab avalanche. And then geologists were like, well, that doesn't happen there. And then they were like, okay, high-pitched humming. And they were like, I don't know about that. And meanwhile, no one's talking about the fact that they were doing nuclear testing right over the mountain range in Siberia.
I still think that's what it all boiled down to.
Oh, absolutely. If I go missing after this podcast, then we know for a fact.
I'm not really rooting for that, but I would like to have an answer. So whatever it takes.
See, I think it was a radioactive Yeti.
That's what it was, definitely.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So let's, now that you've brought up Yetis, what's your thoughts on cryptids overall? Do you think, and I know I'm grouping them all together when I just say cryptids. So let's narrow it down. Let's take Bigfoot. Let's take Yeti, Sasquatch, whatever you want to call it. They're basically the same creature, different parts of the world. What do you think they are? There's people who go by the theory that they're just a creature that's not been discovered yet. There's other people that say they're interdimensional beings. There's other people that say they're aliens, and there's people saying they're a combination of all of it. What are your thoughts on, say, Bigfoot?
Well, not to sidetrack for a second, but you brought up cryptids, and my mind always goes to Mothman and that statue in West Virginia. Pardon my language. His ass is phenomenal. Like, I need his squat routine. But back That's to true. Bigfoot and Yeti. I don't know why they made him so cheeked up in that statue. It's I don't know. See, the thing with cryptids is you brought up a really interesting point where, you know, it's the same creature, different region, different name. And the thing with monsters, folklore, and cryptids, which some of that will be explored in later seasons, is that there are the same creatures and the same stories by different names, and maybe slightly different descriptions based on the climate all over the world. So, you know, there's a Yeti in almost every country. There's a vampire in almost every country, a werewolf, you know, a Mothman type creature. These sort of things pop up throughout history in all of these countries before these countries knew each other existed. So to me, I'm like, okay, there's some sort of truth here, right? There's something actually going on. For Bigfoot and Yeti, the monster is described to be so massive that I would be surprised if it was a creature that wasn't discovered yet with like trail cameras and security patrols and stuff like that. However, I do believe in different dimensions, and I do, as a spiritual witchy medium person, I believe that there's heaven, hell, and purgatory. And like, I've personally meditated and gone to the other side of the veil accidentally and like astral projected over there. And I just like, I think that there are other realms and that there can be holes in dimensions where things come through.
I agree 100%. I don't know that that's what Bigfoot is or other cryptids. I mean, I just, you know, they can be pretty elusive. And let's be honest, it's, you know, they're most of the time in these places that are so, so much acreage that it would be very hard to just find them. I mean, we have people missing all the time that we never find. And there are people, hundreds of people out actively looking for them for a week, week and a half, and they don't find them. So, you know, that's my thing with them. But don't act like that you're just going to talk about how you accidentally went over the veil and we're just going to gloss over that and not talk about that. So I want to know what happened in that. First of all, I want to know how you accidentally do it. And then I want to know what happened when you got there.
So I grew up in a very haunted house, and that's how I learned that I could see ghosts. I don't call myself a medium because I don't actively practice it to, you know, reach out to spirits or contact spirits. It's just something I kind of keep shut off because I have a tendency to scream, jump, and run. That is my my brain goes fight or flight. Ah, you're gonna flight today. Which is why I love ghost hunting. It's like a nice little thrill ride for me. But grew up in a haunted house from a very young age. I used to tell my parents, mommy, daddy, the shadow people are dancing on the walls again. And I just never stopped seeing the ghosts. You know, little kids see spirits all the time. A shaman that I trained with when I was in high school, he was from Korea, and he was very, very practiced in his art of shamanism. And he described it like, you know, all little kids have this hallway, and it's very, very open. And as the influence of the world starts to affect them, it closes and closes and closes. But some people, it stays open. And you can still understand and perceive this other realm of spirits and whatever else is there. So for a long time, I was just kind of, you know, scared to talk about it and really experience it, not just because getting popped out at or like experiencing these feelings, and I wouldn't say visions, but like spirits was scary, but socially there were repercussions. And I was told not to talk about it. I was told not to, you know, read up on it, not to research it. My mom was very scared of it. My dad is a hardcore skeptic. So more recently, as like TikTok became bigger, people started talking about ghosts more. They started talking about witchcraft and mediumship. And I was like, wow, this is something that I actually can embrace about myself and I can bring to the forefront. So I started experimenting and being like, okay, so how do I do this thing? What do I do? So I started with tarot cards, learned how to do that. And then I was like, okay, so what if I just like, you know, astral project? I'm very smell driven. So I'm going to put some incense on, burn these plants that Google says that I should burn. And I'm going to lay down with candles at like wherever Google tells me to, very inexperienced, obviously. I'm just going to let my body go. And I just remember like, I have haunted a lot of haunted objects. One of them got lost by the movers. And this is the one that makes me the most sad because this is the one that's involved in this situation. That one had been with me since I was like 10 or 11. I used to accidentally collect haunted things, not knowing why I was attracted to these items. So I decided, okay, I'm just going to let myself go. I played this music, whatever. And then I see kind of like gray smoke almost, just like just like that. And I started to like go through the smoke, and it almost looked like a hallway. I don't really remember exactly, but I just remember the gray smoke, and then I felt hands on my ankles and on my wrists. And I saw that spirit that I had been with since I was little, because I had this tintype photograph. I think it's her daughter or granddaughter. And she said, "You're not supposed to be here." And I just felt, I woke up, I was like, "Oh my God, what just happened?" That was really scary. And then That's I never amazing. Did it again.
And how old were you when that happened?
I was 22. I used to experience this thing when I was little. I used to call it dreaming awake. And I was convinced that I slept with my eyes open. And I even at one point made my dad film me, because I was like, I can see everything around me. I can see like my room and like some other scary things in the corner. And I can like almost see myself sleeping. I definitely sleep with my eyes open. So my dad like sat there and filmed. And I remember watching him film me. And the entire time on video, my eyes are closed. And it wasn't until the pandemic era that, you know, you had more time to research and experiment. I was like, well, wait, I was astral projecting. That's not good. I need to not do that.
Talking to Kelsey Childs, her podcast is Haunted Detective. You'll want to go out and listen to that as soon as possible. There's 5 or 6 episodes out by the time you listen to this, depending on when it airs. And it's an easy listen to go ahead and start binging on. And you also want to make sure that you leave them a good 5-star review. That helps them to get found out there. Obviously, we don't ask you to do anything that you don't feel warranted to do. So, but I think, trust me, you're going to listen to this. You're going to want to leave them a 5-star review. And make sure you tell them in review that you heard about them on Hillbilly Horror Story, so they know that they got some listeners out there from this episode. Kelsey, tell our listeners out there, if they want to keep up with the show, you've got a lot of social media out there. You've got, you know, TikTok and Facebook and all that. Tell everybody how they can keep up with everything that you got going on.
So TikTok and Instagram are the easiest. My TikTok is haunted_detdetMy official podcast Instagram is haunted.detective with a period. If you message me, though, and you're, you know, within the first 2 or 3 seasons, and you ask for a link to my Discord, I will add you into the Discord community, and is the best way to be able to interact with me, interact with my moderators and other people that are controlling the path of the show. So you can ask questions, you can request topics, stuff like that.
Nice. Let's talk a little bit about your co-host, Griff Milton. How do you guys know each other? How did she become part of the podcast? Tell me a little bit about that.
So I worked at a company called Rooster Teeth for a minute, which is how this podcast came to be. Speaking of cryptids, I found this great video from Red Web Podcast on TikTok, messaged them, thought they were a small creator. They were not. They were very, very large, very big podcast. The host, Trevor Collins, got me a job with Rooster Teeth, which is how I ended up at the network I'm at right now. And I met Griff while I was working there, and we became friends. And I texted her one day, and I was like, "Hey, want to be my co-host?" And she was like, "Hell yeah, let's get spooky."
Well, you guys have a good dynamic together at work, so it's a fun listen. Kelsey, I can't tell you how much fun it's been being on here with you and talking a little bit about this stuff. I love hearing different insights on, you know, like interdimensional and stuff like that. And I like when people definitely have an opinion one way or the other, and you definitely have that. And I appreciate all the hard work you put into the podcast so far. I can't wait to see where it goes.
Thank you so much, Jerry. It's been a lot of fun being on your show and just getting to talk. I love going down these rabbit holes. It's my favorite thing ever.
Awesome. Well, I hope to hear from you soon, maybe in season 2 or 3 when we've got some other cool stuff to talk about.
Absolutely. Maybe I'll have you on to a season special.
Hey, there you go. I appreciate it. Thanks, Kelsey.
Thank you so much.
All right, guys, that wraps it up for us. I hope you guys enjoyed. It's been a long time since we've done a cryptid episode, so it was due. And I hope we did a good one for you.
Yeah. We appreciate you all, and I hope you all have a very blessed week.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.